Hi, welcome to the Empower Ed Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Kaufman, and the purpose of this podcast is to empower teachers, administrators, and parents of public and private school students through uplifting conversations with people across the country. Our goal is to address the initiatives and programs that are having a positive impact on student learning and really get to know the educators who are making a difference in the lives of our children. So sit back, relax, and enjoy a few minutes that may give you an optimistic view of where education is going. So is there a difference between, when we look at all of this, is there a difference between real progress in the in this and just placating?
Yeah. You tied it in perfectly, actually. I think that's a perfect segue, because when you're educated and understand those systems in place that truly dismantle populations and areas like in the ways that they do, when you understand that, you'll look at things like removing the logo from the Aunt Jemima syrup bottle and you'll go, you're missing the point. Right? You'll look at things like naming a street or renaming J.C. Nichols Fountain and look to the west side and see the plaza and look to the east and see those neighborhoods, and you'll go, what does it matter what the fountain is called? Mm-hmm. So, yes, I think there's a difference, but the only way to recognize the difference is to familiarize and educate yourself on this, on the real systems that are in place that are doing the real damage. Mm-hmm. Whether the fountain's named J.C. Nichols or not doesn't matter if the schools and the communities in that neighborhood, you know, struggle with living in a food desert or, you know, not having the resources for quality books in their school district. Right. And I think people miss, when going back to like the disengagement, you see these things happening. Oh, wow. The Confederate NASCAR banned the Confederate flag. Oh, you know, Roger Goodell is allowing players to kneel during the national anthem. But those, when you don't know the real issues, those seem like wins. Those seem like, wow, okay, I can relax now. The protests are working. So yeah, that's where that education comes in. I think you tied that in perfectly.
Yeah. Remember? Oh,
no, go ahead. No, go ahead, please.
I remember a few years ago when I would see those progressions and would think they were so monumental. They were so huge. And I felt so good about it as a white woman. I'm like, oh, look at what us white people are doing. We're doing such good things. Give us a cookie. And and then I kept hearing people say, no, Tina, it's the system. It's the system. It's the system. And I kept going, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And I had to get to the point again where I wasn't willing to sit in that willful ignorance. And I went and I started, there's this thing called the Googles that we go to literally for everything else.
You don't have to read anymore.
What is systemic racism? Right. Where does systemic racism show up in my workplace? And as a teacher, things that I think about are, if we look at our data and our data doesn't lie and it shows a discrepancy in discipline about who is getting disproportionately represented in discipline, who is underrepresented in advanced placement courses, then we have to start looking at things, go, okay, why is that happening? There is something that's quote unquote invisible, meaning nobody is saying, okay, we're going to make sure no black kids get into AP classes. Okay, everybody, there's a quota. You can only recommend one. Nobody's saying that. But those implicit biases are engaging. And there's a, well, the kid has to be recommended. Oh, well. And then it's the same process for everybody. Every kid has to be recommended. But what we don't understand is that our implicit biases are getting in the way for us to see all kids in the same way. So it's already inequitable. So what dismantling that system would look like would be, we're going to let any kid enroll in any advanced classes if they freaking want to. And nobody is going to tell them they can't.
Get rid of all the prerequisites. I don't know how many times that was
that has been the mantra in a few school districts is get rid of the prereqs, because that is what's holding kids back and out of these classes.
We know that there's a school to prison pipeline, right? But we put SROs in our building to help with school discipline that then takes kids where? Oh, if a kid acts up, and that they tend to be the kid that gets the SRO called on them. Those SROs were never intended to be disciplinarians in a school. And there are so many other things that we can do to address student behavior that is not putting them in a cop car and taking them down to juvie. That cannot be the thing. So educate yourself. If you're hearing things on these podcasts or you're seeing things out on social media and you find yourself going, but what does that even mean?
Right.
That's when you go to the Googles. I know you know what that is. Because you use it to fix your car. You use it to build a backyard fire pit. Use it to educate yourself about systemic racism.
Right. And just because I thought about it as you were talking about the discrepancies in like discipline in schools. In addition to educating yourself with just facts and history, talk to or listen to Black people in your circle.
Yes.
Because if you listen to a podcast where folks like myself or Ovi, or you have those Black friends that you claim that shield yourself from racism, go talk to them and ask them what their experience in school was like. Mm-hmm. Talk to a Black kid from Liberty who was the only kid in AP classes, or the only Black kid in gifted classes. And ask them what feelings they felt. And ask them the anger that they might have had when their experience was the way that it was. And then couple that with, there's no teacher to go talk to who looks like me who will understand. And then you start to think about why those discrepancies in discipline might be happening. Then you get to think about what they're going through and how that manifests in behavior, instead of going, oh, they have oppositional defiant disorder, or oh, you know, oh, they get in fights, or whatever the case might be. When you start to have those conversations, you start to go, man, I can imagine what those kids might be dealing with in those school districts, and look around and have no one that they feel like they can go to.
Our white bias a lot of times lends us to try to find the ways all the other people are doing things wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like, well, how can I stop my other white friends from doing anything? Or they get into confirmation bias and see, oh yeah, well, that Black kid does blah, blah, blah. And it's deficit thinking about students, instead of ever turning that spotlight right back around and go, how may I be contributing to that? You know, right now we're seeing a huge emergence of social emotional learning and trauma informed care in schools, but we're not willing to shine the light on ourselves. And it's all, what are some traumas kids are bringing into our schools, and how can we help them through that so that they can be ready to learn? But we're not going, how is our school also creating trauma in our kids? How am I creating trauma for people? And until we shine that light right on ourselves, like, we're doing ourselves a tremendous disservice.
Yeah. Social function theory states that if something is not serving its purpose, it needs to be changed in the society, or it needs to be dismantled and cease to exist. And there's multiple things in our society that is not truly serving its function for the masses as a whole, such as the police department, such as education, which means that it needs to be changed. So in order to truly see progress, we must truly ensure change. But when you just say, like, hey, we stand with you, we support you, but what does that mean? That's not an action plan. Like, we're at the point where we have to get past the lip service and have to have a action plan, and we must be able to check box something measurable. Something that has to be like, hey, I see that. And so I say, you know what's important to a person when you see what they invest their money into. Mm-hmm. Like, if somebody has super nice cars, that's important to them. Like, they want to invest their money there. There's nothing wrong with that. But when you look at our society and you see what we invest our money into, you see what's important to our society. And we don't invest enough money into education, which proves that it's not important to our society. It's not. If it was, we wouldn't be in this situation right now, because education has the ability to solve all of these things. And you know what's important to a school building when you see what they invest their money into and what their programs are and what their kids support and what that school culture is. So if you walk into a school and it's like, hey, you know, what do you do for marginalized groups here? And if they give you the PR answer, if they give you like the status quo answer, they don't have a plan. But what's so hard about truly making change? Like, hey, we're going to make a commitment to hire Black leadership. Mm-hmm. We're going to do it. We're going to make sure that happens. We're going to make a commitment to hire more people of color in education. But they're not applying. If you say that one more time,
right,
you are proving that you don't care. You can't keep saying the same thing you were saying a decade ago. You need to leave. Step out of your comfort zone and go find them and bring them to your organization. Well, how do I do that? You do whatever it takes, if it's important enough to you. There's HBCUs all around this country. People relocate all the time. Kansas City is one of the best places to raise a family. It is a great place for a young adult to start their teaching career. You go down to a HBCU, you grab them, you get them, you entice them to come up here. Well, they don't want to come to Kansas City, Missouri. I bet if you offer to maybe pay some of their loans, mm-hmm, they will come. Yeah. How important is it to you? That sounds like such a radical idea. It's not that radical idea when you see what some of these people are getting paid and see what we're investing our money into. Mm-hmm. Stop investing money into below average PD and simply ask your marginalized groups how they feel. Give them a voice, give them a platform to speak, give the LGBTQ community to speak and help them help you write legal documents to protect themselves. Invite the people of color to the table and give them positions of power and pay them. Stop getting this information for free. That's not right. That's not fair, because you're paying some white person to come in and give you information over data that won't mean a damn thing by the time these kids graduate, because they graduated with a 4.2 and they don't know how to treat a person that's different than them. You really didn't serve your purpose at all.
Right.
But instead, you can take that $10,000 that you decided to invest into this PD and maybe invest into a school program and let the kids take charge. Mm-hmm. We've seen what adults do with the power. We ain't doing nothing right. Give the kids a say. That way they can be responsible for their own learning, and that's going to entice them to care more. Let them have a say in what's going on in the school. Stop requiring so many credits. Make it a little bit more looser to where the kids can choose their classes. Then real quickly, you're going to find what classes we don't need.
Yeah, right.
We don't need this class, because if we're doing what's important for the kids, then that teacher needs to learn to teach something else. Yeah. Not force the kid to learn something you want them to. Because as long as we're going to review the curriculum. But if we review the curriculum and it looks the same as it did last year, that ain't change. You're not really making progress. If American history looks the same way it did last year, that's not change. If you don't have a full plan to ready to address COVID come August, that ain't change. You're being ignorant. You're being complicit. So school districts, organizations throughout the United States of America have to start coming up with action plans. And my first one is very simple. Start hiring more people of color. Start hiring people from marginalized groups. So instead of going out to outsource somebody for $10,000, that's already in Jordan's contract when I hired him. So Jordan, hey, help me out, man, because you're bringing two things to me. Because while we're still talking about Black people, interracial relationships are on the rise, and there's biracial people out there who are really suffering from identity crisis, mm-hmm, in elementary school, in middle school. And so let's stop being late to the party. Take out the SRO and maybe put in building level interventionists. They can diffuse that situation to the point you don't even need the SRO. I was once in a school where an SRO was breaking up a fight, and he was being super aggressive with the Black kid. And I said, hey, man, let me step in. And I simply grab the kid and I say, hey, man, relax. I'm here for you. Man, oh, you don't get it, man. He's tripping. I said, I hear you. We're going to calm down. We're going to talk about it. And we're going to go to the front office. And you're going to have a chance to say your side of the story. Now, had I not been there, I already saw the way the police officer was holding the kid's arm. Right. Which, I don't care who you are. Don't put your hands on me. Don't hold my arm. Mm-hmm. I am going to get defensive. Mm-hmm. Get your hands off me because I didn't put my hands on you. So as a man to put your hands on a kid, now this kid has no thought but to defend himself. Yeah. And then you get mad when he tries to defend himself. And now you may or may not use excessive force. Mm-hmm. You think you're doing your job. Everybody else sees racism. You're being super aggressive with this black kid. So how can I, as someone who's not trained like this SRO, go to this kid and be like, hey, man, everything all right? Just calm it down. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this. You good? Hey, I'm good, man. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. The kid's telling me I'm sorry. Hey, you didn't do nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. Let's just calm down. Let's talk about this and let's figure out what happened. And you get these building level interventionists. That way counselors can actually counsel, or you can get some academic advisors to help kids figure out what they truly want to do, and that college isn't for everybody, or maybe we want to go into this trade school, or I don't know, I might be able to start my own business. Mm-hmm. That's change. But if we keep going in with the systems where we got the SROs doing this and they're policing everything, and we got this piss poor curriculum that's whitewashed and people aren't learning about anything different, then that's not change to me. That's just saying that, hey, we reviewed the curriculum and, oh, along with Martin Luther King, I'm going to teach you about Malcolm X too. Mm-hmm. Great. But
we're going to make him sound like a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm.
How about you put both of those on pause and teach me about the Black Panthers? Why don't you teach me about Angela Davis? That way, maybe women can think more about themselves. Mm-hmm. Why don't we stop telling these kids that they're just athletes and infuse athletics within education and show them how LeBron James is just not a basketball player, but he's an activist, and you can be too. Mm-hmm. You can lead the charge within your community. So the football captain, the volleyball captain, we're going to form a coalition and you guys are going to have a say along with student council. Mm-hmm. And you all are going to be diverse leaders. And we're going to talk about how we can change curriculum for the future students. Mm-hmm. That's change. Yeah. But why are we so afraid to give these kids the power? Why are we so afraid to give black people power? Why are we so afraid to give these marginalized groups power? We don't want to take over. We just want to be equal.
That's it right there.
Period.
Well, we're afraid of losing power.
Absolutely.
Okay, it's the idea of a zero-sum game. And I'll tell you, the other side of it, I'll come back to that, but the other side of it is policy change.
Right.
And folks have to look at the policies that are in place. And when a policy says a fight, you know, hey, we don't want fights in school. I understand mm-hmm. that. We mm-hmm. don't. We don't want kids to fight. But rather than being proactive, and trying to get at it before the kids, create a trusting relationship with kids so that they can come to you and say, hey, I think so-and-so and so-and-so are about to fight. So that we can get to them before they get in that fight, and we can calm it down and keep our schools safe that way. Rather than do that, we put on a reactive policy that says, if you fight, it's 10 days out and you go to jail. That right there. That's a policy that has to go. That mm-hmm. zero tolerance idea mm. has got to go. Mm-hmm. Okay. You have to look at those policies. You guys said it. You have to look at where and it helps everyone. It lifts all boats.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It helps everyone. But that zero sum game is why we don't see leaders. Mm-hmm. Okay. In schools. It is. If I give this power to somebody else, I will lose power.
And I'm going to do you guys a huge favor, because you can't claim ignorance after listening to this podcast. All right. Bryce keeps saying the zero sum game. And guys, if you don't understand what that means, he's taking what usually is money and inserting the word power. And basically, there's this ideal that there's this limited amount of power that exists in an organization in our country. And if Brett has it, he doesn't want me to have it, instead of Brett having it and giving me some of it so we can work together. The zero-sum game is this ideal that if I don't have the power, he has the power, which makes me powerless.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's not what we're trying to get at in any way, shape, or form. All right. And that's what I do believe. That's the truth, though.
That is, yeah,
like people are just afraid to, like, man, if we give him power, he's gonna make everything black. It's gonna be all of this black power, and there's gonna be all this
racism. So what difference does it make?
Right.
Well, I think there's the proof of the kind of remnants of that fear of what black people would do if they got the power, because we did slavery to them.
Yeah.
So what would they do to us in retaliation, yeah, type of thing, right? And that's a fear, that's a psychological thing that I think as a culture, white people have to sort out, because you have a group of people over here just going, we just want an equal footing.
Yeah.
If we're not looking to enslave you. There's that empathy piece. Like, why would we, not we, we didn't experience it directly, but as a community, as a history, as a black person, when you can understand what that was.
What that oppression is.
And feel it in today's world, how it's morphed and shifted and impacted people that we know and even ourselves in unique ways. We don't want to do that to anyone.
Right.
We just want an equal footing. And so... yeah, I think there's that fear too of like, if there's power, what are they gonna do with it?
Yeah. One of the things that you were talking about, Ovi, with HR and hiring,
yeah,
more diverse faculty and how important that is.
Yeah.
I can also see that being co-opted in a sense that, okay, we have our checklist, we hired our five people, boom, yeah, done, but not going again system-wide and saying, how are we creating a culture or an environment that is welcoming to them? Because we've got no business going out hiring black teachers when we have a racist environment to bring them into. We can't do that either. So if any of this work feels like it's easy, okay, yep, I hired my one black person, then we're not doing it right.
Yep.
Because we have to create an environment where they can flourish and where they would want to stay. The Kansas State Board of Education had a panel about equity and education in Kansas, and there were five black panelists, and four of them are black superintendents in Kansas, and one is a black school board president. And one of the things that Dr. Lewis from Lawrence said is that we're so serious about diversifying that we've gone to our local community and said, who are the apartments in town that want to give us a deal? Mm. Like, let's work out a deal. If you know the teachers only make this, can we bring them to your apartment complex or to your rental facility, if it's a house or whatever, and you can cut them a deal because we're trying to bring them here.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's the kind of systemic stuff we're talking about.
Nope.
Creating an environment that people would want to come, because there's monetary benefit also. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't always have to be that the school district is having to fork over all of the money. This can be something that the whole community can do together because it's something that it values.
Should be.
Yeah.
Yep. Should be.
Well, with that, y'all, I want to thank you, each and every one of you, for coming in again. And we will be having more conversations about race and in the very near future. But thank you all for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Empower Ed with your host, Brett Kaufman. Send us your comments and feedback by becoming a member to the Empower Ed Network. You can find us at www.teachempowered.com. That's www.teachempowered.com. And remember to spell empowered with an I, because when you're empowered, every student learns. Take care and subscribe to our channel for more uplifting conversations about our educational landscape.